Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the Slacktivist Action Group.
Donald Trump has been president for a week, and it's worse than we thought it was going to be. He's actually doing what he said he was going to do. A man who has contradicted himself for decades. What a terrible time to be consistent. The only plus point is he's still having a go at his own security services. Now, given that 6 out of 44 US presidents have been shot, that seems to be a mistake. He's already got a 1 in 7 chance of not making it through the 4 years. The more he has a go at his own security services, those odds seem to be increasing, don't they? They're supposed to take a bullet for him. My guess is if he keeps slagging them off, there's every chance at just the wrong moment they'll suddenly realise their shoelaces are undone and duck. And then we've had Theresa May going over there talking Brexit. But we now know what Brexit's going to look like. It's going to be a red, white and blue Brexit. What the hell does that mean? Just meaningless guff, isn't it? Red, white and blue Brexit. Given that it's also the colours of the flag of France, of the Netherlands, of Slovenia, Slovakia, the Czech Republic, Croatia and Luxembourg. Red, white and blue. A Brexit that's good for communists, the Ku Klux Klan and Smurfs. And in a country that's currently divided, she has said that she is going to introduce for the first time religiously selective education, which is 100% selective. Now, we had the Casey report, didn't we, on integration, and it said the best way for integration was to get kids to mix at school at an early age. But now we can have 100% religiously selected, segregated schools, but the only test they must pass is that for those schools to be 100% religiously selective, people who from different religions have to be happy to send their kid there if there was any space, which there won't be. But you're thinking that's actually quite a hard test to pass. I mean, let's say, for example, you were part of the Jedi religion. It's most unlikely you'd be happy to send your kid to a school that was 100% Sith. We had a kid at our school who was Jehovah's Witness. Why would any kid want to go to a school where they were the odd one out? During assemblies, he had to sit outside because he didn't want to be, or his parents didn't want him to be, influenced by the assemblies. But to the best of my knowledge, none of us were influenced by the assemblies. And he was much more influenced by being the odd one out. Because the assemblies were hardly ever religious. Mostly, it was just about boring notices like Mrs. E. Smith had had her windows broken on the way to school. Did anybody know who it was? And people were always tempted to suggest the one kid who wasn't in the hall at the time. The thing is, if we want a more tolerant Britain, we need kids to grow up around other kids who are different from them, don't we? If we grow up around kids who have got rosary beads or headscarves or skullcaps or whatever, it's commonplace. You know, people are just kids together. Whereas if you say you come across a burger for the first time, you're going to be nervous, aren't you? Whereas if you say you've been to Dubai, if you've been to their water slide park, which is known as Wild Wadi, and you've seen women in full burqas going down giant water slides, you'll never be frightened of burqas ever again, because it's the funniest thing you've ever seen. You see these Western women going down these giant water slides in Wild Wadi, then spending 2 minutes picking their thongs out of their own anus. And then you see the local Arab women going down giant water slides in burqas, getting to the bottom, laughing with all their mates because they have effectively gone down a giant water slide fully clothed but with no peripheral vision. And as anybody knows who's ever jumped into a swimming pool fully clothed, it is incredibly liberating until you realise you've left your phone in your fucking pocket. So, ladies and gentlemen, would you please welcome our three guests for tonight. Bryony Gordon, Telegraph columnist, Pete Wishart, SNP MP for Perth, and also Russell Kane. It's always nice to share early on as a group, so hopefully you've come with something that you've been slack about and that maybe in an ideal world you'd be less slack about. Russell, can you maybe kick us off?
Definitely. I wish I'd been less slack about stretching and warming up today. I've been a dance for Comic Relief, a charity dance, where I had to get dressed as Taylor Swift and dance around Westfield Shopping Centre, and my neck and back went on the first attempt at the splits.
And I've seen the pictures, it is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I would shake it off, went like that. So be less slack about stretching, including on planes. And I used to mock people that stretched on long-haul flights. I normally get, you know, the
little DVT socks or whatever you.
Well, I always get the seat, and then in front of me I get the sort of lady that's overly diligent, effectively lap dancing me with her deep vein thrombosis dance. It's always really awkward, but I'll never mock that ever again.
It's better than the people who just throw their seat back as you're doing your little stretches and.
I know. I've seen that in economy. I sometimes walk down and have a look, but.
Oh, he's changed, hasn't he? He's changed.
I'm joking. I'm a slacktivist. I travel in the hold, in the cargo.
And you do a bit of work for BBC Three and then, oh, you come all premium economy on with now. Lovely. What about you, Bryony?
I think the thing I should be less slack about is sex with my husband.
Yeah.
Not that I have sex with other people.
We're sharing more than I was expecting to tonight, I'll be honest.
Have you tried stretching first?
That's the problem. No, but so, like, really, I was thinking about this. I said to him yesterday, I said, darling, when was the last time we had sex? And he said, how old is our daughter?
Oh, my God.
And I said, 3.5. And he said, that plus 9 months? So I think I should be, like, I like to share. That's one of the things I do best. It's the only thing I'm very good at is sharing.
Yeah.
So.
It's always nice to, you know, I suppose in some ways it's nice that you've got your daughter because you can then work out when you did last have sex.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, it's quite overrated sex, I think.
Yeah. Right. What's,
with my husband it is.
Yeah, well, no.
Well, let's ask some of the other ladies. Where do you think he's been for the last 3 years?
Get an opinion from.
So, Pete, you're going to struggle to
There's no way I can match that one, that's for sure.
Stretching and shagging.
If you're having sex with my husband, I'll be really cross.
I'll see if I could fit both of these in to my one, which is get to your show on time, because I came from the House of Commons this evening, and of course you can't get up. Whitehall is absolutely and utterly mobbed with a demonstration against Donald Trump.
Yeah. Hey. That's it. Some of us been there early doors already and then coming on here for a beer.
Yeah, so like I had to make my way back to the Westminster Tube Station to get up here on time. So in the future, I promise to be less slack about getting to your show on time if I'm ever invited back on, you know, like after this particularly looks like poor example of slacktivism.
I didn't really quite understand what you were saying there, Pete, but I couldn't work out whether you were being supportive or not, so I'll assume that you were and go, thank you very much. Is that okay? Yes. So, well, you're talking about having had a busy day and tricky getting here. Lots going on at the moment, Pete. The Supreme Court voted that Parliament get to have a say about Brexit. Nigel Farage, obviously not happy about that. Also not happy on the same day. I don't know if you saw this, a BBC News flash. He'd just been given a job on Fox News as an analyst, yep. And somebody on BBC News had snuck in a little C into the middle of the word analyst, and he was now apparently becoming an anal cyst.
For Fox News.
Probably a job he's pretty much well accustomed to.
Yes. But him not the only one. The SNP not at all happy that you don't feel you get a say on Brexit either.
Well, Scotland overwhelmingly voted to remain in the European Union, 62% of the Scottish people, every local authority area, and we're just determined that we're not going to be dragged out of the European Union against our will. And, you know, I mean, there's a real sense, and a growing sense, an emerging feeling in Scotland that, you know, our voice should be listened to. And there was a big meeting today in Cardiff, which you probably saw. We had all the leaders of all the devolved parliaments came together with the Prime Minister and David Davis to see if there's some way that our view could be accommodated. We're not looking for much. We just want a recognition that, you know, we did something different and we've got different requirements and we want a different outcome and we want to be in a different place, you know, from the rest of the UK, which we accept voted to leave. So, you know, this is our beef with all this.
Keep on going to visit David Davis and he keeps on saying he's listening and then he basically just nods his head and ushers them out of the room. But at the moment, what happened was, wasn't it, is that Nicola Sturgeon had said, if you're in the single market, then we'll be happy. And if you're not going to be in the single market, then Scotland would like to be in the single market. Yeah. But that is quite a tricky thing. If Scotland's in the single market and England isn't, isn't it? You've got free movement between Scotland and the rest of Europe, but no free movement between Scotland and England, although they're still part of the same country.
Well, the thing is, like, there's no plan for this. There is no blueprint about how you take a nation out of the European Union. So everything's totally up in the air. I think all we're saying is that, you know, like, there's certain things that we can do which is different from the rest of the UK. And we presented a plan and what we thought was a very modest and well-thought-out proposal about accommodating our place in the United Kingdom, because I concede that it wasn't the result I wanted, but Scotland voted to remain in the UK. So how do we square that with our vote to remain in the European Union? So we thought we'd try and do a compromise deal to see if that would be acceptable. But at this stage, it doesn't seem that they're in the mind to listen to it.
No,
surprisingly.
And it's got Labour in absolute turmoil. The three-line whip for the vote in the next couple of days, when two of the whips are going to go and vote against it. So that three-line whip will very quickly become one-line whip as they go through the wrong door.
Well,
so
you know, you just get used to the new Labour cabinet, and then all of a sudden they're all resigning again, you know, and you're just actually starting to make sort of common cause with whoever's your opposite number with the various tasks that we've got, and then they're resigning, you know. They hang around for at least a few months just to see if they can actually do anything useful with this post before doing this. But Labour are in a dreadful position, and I don't know quite how they've got to the place where they are, where tomorrow evening they'll vote for Article 50, effectively saying that the UK should come out of the European Union, and there's massive, massive unhappiness among so many Labour MPs tonight. And, you know, I think over the next couple of days it's going to be fascinating listening to some of the contributions from all my colleagues, not just in the Labour Party. So it's 2 days, folks. If you've not had enough of Brexit, you could be listening to 12 o'clock tomorrow night and then the following evening to 8. Then if that's not enough for you, there's another 3 days next week where the House of Commons will debate the committee stage of Brexit.
And then the SNP are putting forward 50 amendments to something that's not quite 50 words long. So all that excitement to be had. Nicola Sturgeon says that she thinks the second referendum for independence almost inevitable.
Yeah, I think we're at the stage where this is an inevitability now. We've put forward a plan, a proposal that keeps us in the UK, keeps us in the EU. If it's just going to be completely disregarded, I think we have to revisit this. I mean, Brexit is one of the greatest historic acts of economic, cultural and social self-flagellation. You know, imagine doing this to ourselves. We just want to see if the lifeboat's available for us. See if we could all get on that lifeboat and sail off into, you know, like, waters that we know are charted, we know that are secure and works in our interest. And Scotland's in a unique position when it comes to the nations of the United Kingdom, that we've got a plan and we've got a means to get out of all this. And so I'm really hoping that where it's might not be necessary, we've got that as a backup plan which will secure our place in the EU. So I think we're going to be there. And I think this time we'll decisively win it. I really do. I mean, I think last time round it was all about the uncertainties about...
Well, remaining as part of the UK was the safe option,
yes,
economically. And now, economically, nobody's quite sure exactly what's going on. So it's... you know, and with a bit of global warming, Scotland is looking a very attractive prospect, isn't it?
It's funny, I chair the Scottish Affairs Committee and we're doing an inquiry into Scotland's relationship with the High North and the Arctic. And of course, it's all melting, so we get great trade routes and all these other opportunities open up for us. So, you know, it's taking advantage of emerging global situations.
But some trade.
You'll be there during the apocalypse going,
oh, goody! Scotland will get its independence now. There you go.
So, Brian, you were on record on the Telegraph for Christmas, a ban on Brexit talk, possibly with your husband. I'm not quite sure. But you'd had enough of Brexit. But given that the negotiations might go on for another 10 years, if you've had enough of Brexit talk now, you must be worried that your tears will be red, white and blue come...
I only wanted a ban on Brexit talk during Christmas. Yes. I'm fine. But it's quite weird. I'm in an unusual situation where I work for a paper, The Telegraph, which is very supportive of Brexit, and I'm not. my dad, who's like a card-carrying Labour member and has stood for council, he's like, you're my little Trojan horse. But no, we do... The reason I wanted a ban on Brexit chat in my house is because we talk too much about Brexit and not about other things.
Yes, no.
With my husband.
Like sex.
Like sex.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, if you're talking Brexit, it's not really a good foreplay. I don't think. No.
I find it's... Yeah. It's not good. No, yeah.
Are we in or out? That's precisely the point.
And you, Russell,
yes.
You're very much of the get on with it score, in more ways than one, quite possibly.
I wish I could be an original comedian like Jeff Norcott, for example, who's on Question Time in the week. But unfortunately, I'm sort of the Guardian reading Remainer. I'm sorry, I know it's unoriginal, but I am. However, literally all of my family and all of my friends but one were Brexit. So all of my... You know, people like say, oh, your Facebook feed's fake. Well, mine was only full of immigrants, Polish, we're getting our country back, the whole thing. And a bunch of optimistic middle-class people around me going, it's not really about immigration. And everyone around me's going, I wish Polish people would shut off. I mean, that's what people are saying when the pub door is closed. I know people don't want to hear that, but that is what's being freaking said. And so I was, in the way, in an enviable position of sort of being politically and where I am culturally now, a Remainer for all the boring reasons that have been said 100 times, but at the same time, connected to people who genuinely believe that their lives are worse for being joined to Europe. My mum's a cleaner, she's just retired. Her partner, mum's got a boyfriend. Stop shagging my mum. And my mum's partner is a carpenter, and he is convinced, and maybe he's right, but not in the way he thinks, that his wages are going down and he can get less work because of migrant labour working for nothing. Which, of course, we argue, because I'm like, yeah, but the reason those migrant labour are being paid nothing is not because of the migrant labour, and then we have a big argument in the pub. But that... So I've done research on the ground. I haven't just gone, you know, hey, listen to what working class people are saying. You know, that's genuinely my background. So I was very torn, and in the best way possible.
And are you nervous, though, if you're keen to get on with it, the negotiations and Boris Johnson, putting him in charge of our diplomatic relations? An act of gross self-harm, isn't it? It'd be like making Jeremy Clarkson ambassador to Argentina or something.
It is stunning that he is... I mean, of all the jobs you could give him to shut him up, it's not hanging out with foreigners to see what will happen. You're a very musical people, I believe. Boris, shut up. And, I mean, God knows what's going to happen. I mean, I'm not... If you're getting at the second vote thing, I'm not one of those guys who are like, let's have the vote again. I think we'd all... You know, we'd be in danger of dying from boredom, the whole country. There'd be no British people left to Brexit. We'd just be withered skeletons that have turned grey from boredom. We've talked ourselves to death. So I do think we need to get on with it, but it's not good enough to go into it blindly. I'm glad Theresa May's got to show her hand a little bit. I was reading the paper the other day, she's got two advisors, two of which are being paid £70,000 each, with a lot of people struggling and nurses not being paid enough, and all she could come up with was Brexit means Brexit on £140,000 worth of advice. I'd like some money back, please. I think it's a good thing she's got to stand up and go, this is what it's going to look like.
She's obviously just been over to America, the first foreign leader to go and see Donald Trump in the White House. They kept on getting her name wrong, didn't they? They spelt it wrong, pronounced it wrong.
They kept saying sugar tits. And they... Hey, sugar tits.
It's not difficult, though, is it? Theresa May.
Well, it is, no, but apparently...
Well, there's a lot of Theresas. You could be a Theresa. A lot of people Theresa as a pronunciation of that name.
Well, that's how we pronounced it, wasn't it? And but apparently the way they spelt it, she is actually a well-known soft porn actress. And you half
wondered...
Do you think
they Googled?
Well, that's it. He basically Googled the wrong person and then said, all right, we'll have them over first.
That's why he held her
hand moment even more illuminating now, doesn't it?
The reason that supposedly, do you see the reason what he held a hand is that he's afraid of heights.
Yes,
I know.
It was one step, but you're thinking if he is going to come over on a state visit, surely we take him up the Shard, don't we? And get him to sign the free trade deal up there, and we won't let him down beforehand.
He's got a long way to fall, so he wants to watch out.
What do we make of him coming over? I mean, it's state visit.
I mean, the speed that petition was signed was absolutely quite amazing. I think it's now standing at 1,200,000 people have signed the petition to say there shouldn't be a state visit and they shouldn't have the opportunity to meet Her Majesty the Queen when he's across here. And just the speed in this and the response of the British people, I think, has been quite remarkable for this. There's tens of thousands of people in Whitehall tonight protesting. And I think there's something just jars with us and jars with our sense of fair play, our idea of democracy and what we value, our role in the world, where, you know, he could just blithely say that seven countries, Muslim countries, are just going to be closed and banned from getting to the United States. And there's all the other things like the building of the wall. They're just something that grates, I think, with the way that we see politics. And it's quite incredible, the response we've been having.
But
really
the wall
impressed.
Is remarkable. Is it apparently that they've discovered 200 tunnels in the last 20 years, you know, from the Mexico to the US side. And you think, if the Mexicans are building tunnels when there is no wall, what is the point of building the wall?
And why on earth would they want to come to the United States when he's president too, you know?
Travelling the other way, won't they?
Exactly. But keep people in.
Yesterday we were having breakfast and my husband and I were discussing how shocked we were that he'd implemented... I don't know why we were shocked that he'd implemented it, because he's Donald Trump and he had like two policies and one of them was ban Muslims from entering the country and... Oh, look what he's done. But we were talking about it, and my daughter, who is, as you know, 3.5, she said, "Mummy, Daddy, what are you talking about?" And we said, "Well, there's a man, he's president, he's not been very nice to people from other countries, and we should be welcoming to everyone." And she just looked at us and said, "Why don't you just give him a star chart?" And I thought, well, actually, maybe that's a good idea.
Yeah.
If you don't ban any large groups of people for 7 days, you'll get a treat, Donald.
It's good. It's good in theory, but he won't be able to get up the naughty step because of his phobia.
I have to lead him up there.
I'm always in two minds when a country like the UK starts talking about banning things, because I think we're better than that. The problem is the phrase state visit, it being sanctioned by the Queen. I mean, it's bizarre anyway. It's not, you know, it's not really the Queen. It's not like she's going, hey, apparently there's a guy who hates all Muslims and Philip's gone, let's get him round for dinner. And, but I don't know how popular this would be. I think, get him over here, sit him down, sit him next to bloody David Dimbleby if we can. Let's have a debate with him on our territory. Let's not shy away from people like this. You know, this is the UK. We don't have to ban things because we don't agree with them. We should bring it in and have that debate out and have him on home. So it shows more confidence, I think.
Trump's mother was Scottish, wasn't it? Apparently she loved the Queen, so he's desperate to come over here.
It's funny you should mention that, because I was at a burn supper in the very village that Donald Trump's mother was born in just the other evening there, in Tong, it's called, up in the Isle of Lewis.
And burning a wicker man in her absence.
Yes, all I can say
it's
is...
It's a different type of burns night.
It's a very much mixed response that you get up there, and there's a real palpable sense of embarrassment almost for this small community. And Trump turned up and he visited the island, visited the village. He came in his big jet and had a pipe band that turned up. And, you know, after spending 97 seconds at his mother's cottage, he came and said, hey, I feel really Scottish now. I can back in touch with my roots. You know, after spending just about a minute in that place.
Would he be entitled to then, if he had a Scottish passport in the event of this independence referendum?
Well, we're welcoming to most people world, and we'd like to extend the hands of friendship and accommodation. But,
free movement bar one. Yeah. But in terms of him coming over, presumably like Obama, he would stay in Buckingham Palace. Oh. I'm not sure he would actually like Buckingham Palace. I mean, probably not quite gold enough for his tastes.
I like he's also like, I don't want to meet Prince Charles. I want Prince William and Harry. Now, the idea of William and Harry, given that he once said, I'm going to nail their mother. Yeah. I mean, he didn't say their mother, but I want to nail Diana. I'm not sure they'd be that welcoming.
Well, no, but also, I mean, I don't think they'd be that welcoming, but also, I don't... Harry and Melania. Now, there's an interesting combo when she's staying at Buckingham Palace, isn't it? You know, I could have shagged your mother 20 years ago. Isn't quite as good as, well, I played strip billiards with your wife last night.
Ah, yeah, that would be awesome. Milk.
But in terms of the policies, he was saying torture was okay, waterboarding works, even Mad Dog, or whatever his defence chief is known, was saying it doesn't work. But George Bush thought it worked, didn't he? Yeah, there was a case, I think it was Abu Zubaydah, which was supposed to be an al-Qaeda informative, wasn't it? Said that there was going to be a Washington dirty bomb, then said that al-Qaeda had links with Saddam. Both of them proved to be false under torture, as was the fact that this bloke was in fact an al-Qaeda operative, wasn't it? And although everybody says it's bullshit, George Bush, even when he's writing his own book, makes himself sound like an arse. It's quite a talent.
Well, you know, there have been lots of famous special relationships. There's Marg, Thatcher and Reagan, there was Bush and Blair. And the one that seems most unbelievable, you know, is Trump and Theresa May, because they are just so entirely different. I mean, I don't know if anybody watches Theresa. I mean, she's got this really haunted look on her face all the time when she's answering questions. It's like she's... I mean, I think Matt Ford says it's like she's remembered something really awful in her childhood and her mouth drops a little bit like this. And it's just a strange way she's doing it. And to see her with Donald Trump, who's, you know, like the prime example of the extroverted narcissist, and like the two of them together, it's an incredible combination.
Given that he is such a narcissist, you can't have a special relationship, given that he's such a special relationship with himself,
exactly,
isn't it?
Yeah.
It was like watching a really, really... Do you remember Blind Date, when there was a really bad date and they went away? It was like watching that, wasn't it? It had like all the chemistry of a sort of paving slab.
Yes. Yeah.
And this after the inauguration, where all the photos showing that Obama had got far more people, but no, this was the most people who'd ever turned out for an inauguration, period, or whatever they said. And it was like, oh yeah, we had the same amount of people, only they looked much smaller on camera because they were slimmer or whatever bullshit
we had
excuse.
Skinnier people, that's what we had. Yeah. Yeah. It's closer skinny. Together.
They put this poor guy, Sean Spicer, out, who seems to do all the response to the media and does all the press conferences, and he's got the job of trying to sort of relay this to the press, and he is going to prove to be probably the most amusing press spokesperson since Comical Alley. Remember that? You know, he's got that little bit about... He's not got the exaggerated sort of hand movements and way of speaking, but, you know, like it's almost the same. He's expected to present and defend and define what is just the absurd something. So he's going to be fascinating to watch for the next few years and months.
And you've been over there recently, Bryony. You were over there last year, and I think you were over there when the Brussels terrorist attack was on. And as a show of solidarity, on the Freedom Tower, the Americans put up the French flag. Is that right? As a show of solidarity to the people of Belgium.
Like the way they were going on about it on the news, they were like... They honestly said they... I don't know why I chose to watch Fox News, but sometimes you really want to wind yourself up. They were like, all Americans in Europe should stay inside. I'm like, all of Europe? Like, I was watching it and imagining like a scene from Game of Thrones, like medieval kind of flames. And I called my mum and I was like, Mum, what's going on? What's going on? And then I realised that there's this sort of horrible culture of fear. And, you know, we talk about... talking about not letting in people from seven different Muslim countries, but, you know, even just going as a blonde white woman, it's the most unfriendly experience. Yeah. At passport control, and I thought to myself, actually, you know, I'd so much rather live in the EU than in Donald Trump's America. And that was back in March, but I didn't actually think Donald Trump's America was ever going to happen. No. Actually, I didn't think Brexit was going to happen either. So
it was just
sort of thrived on a culture of fear. And, you know, I think we're better than that and we're bigger than that. And I always remember like after the 7/7 bombings, that brilliant, which was awful, but the next day everyone just got back on the tube, you know. I love that sort of just get on with it. And And I think you're right. I think we should. I think he should come, and I think we should show him how, you know, ballsy we are. And yeah,
let's protest peacefully. Let's have debates. Let's grill him over here, rather than go, oh, let's just keep the thing away that we don't agree with. It's not.
I'd like to get him on Question Time with you.
That's what I think. Next to Dimbley. I had a panic attack during the night before I went on Question Time that I'd be asked about a country and I didn't know where it was and my career would be over. like you'd go, and what do you think of Turkmenistan? I'd be like, oh God, where's Turkmenistan?
It'd be like that bloke who was standing for the American president there, wasn't it? Yeah. What do you think of Aleppo? I'm terribly sorry, I have no idea what Aleppo is.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So, Brian, you've been very busy yourself. You've set up Mental Health Mates.
Yeah.
It's a walk and talk. People can walk and talk.
Yeah. It's a year ago, we set it up. So I have become sort of an accidental... People say, oh, you've become an accidental poster girl for mental illness. And I was like, well, that was the only thing I was ever going to become a poster girl for. It was going to be bikinis or lipstick. But I have always... Since I was 12, I've had OCD. And people always say, oh, I'm a little bit OCD. And it's sort of... OCD is really debilitating. I mean, it's called obsessive compulsive disorder. And people think it's all about, you know, being clean. And my husband sometimes says to me, I wish you had the good type of OCD. Because, like, people always say to me, oh, God, I'm so OCD. You should see my sock drawer. I'm like, I don't have a fucking sock drawer. I have a floor drobe. And anyway, I have this horrible form of OCD called Pure O, which manifests itself. I describe OCD as, like, your brain refusing to acknowledge what your eye can see. So be that the oven is off, that the candles are out, that you haven't just run over a child in the road, it's just a speed bump, or that you haven't just murdered someone. When I was 17, I thought I was a serial killer and I'd blanked it all out in shock. And I just had this thing and I didn't know it was OCD because OCD to me was this kind of slightly comedy thing. And I kept it to myself. So I got it when I first had it when I was 12, all the way till I was 34, basically. I'm now 36. And then I thought I'd had enough of it. After I had my daughter, I had a really bad episode. And the worst episode of it all, which was I thought maybe I might have molested my own child and then blanked it out. This is a form of Pure O, and it's incredibly common, but no one talks about it because it's not really dinner party chat, is it?
I just want to ask everyone, did I or did I?
Yeah. And can you imagine that? And I mean, this might be why me and my husband haven't had sex for a very long time. Yeah. Because I'm like...
We're definitely getting a fuller picture.
I'm like this, like manically doing that. But no, it's a really horrible illness and it's really common and lots of people, and you know, people with this type of OCD are the least likely to, you know, to do that, those kind of things. But you know, we all have those thoughts, like, you're standing on the tube platform, you think, what if I just push that person under the central line? Or someone hands you their newborn baby and you think, fuck, what if I dropped it? But someone with OCD goes, oh my God, I've had this thought, this means I'm a terrible human being. Anyway, blah, 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 blah. I get it. This time last year, I was just finishing up writing my book about mental illness called Mad Girl, which is out now in all good and bad bookshops. And and who knew that writing a book about mental illness might make you a bit mentally ill? And I was really, really ill this time last year. And when I'm ill, I do what I think I can't do, which is just to carry on living. And I basically go outside and I run. And you can tell I'm very athletic. But just until I look like I've been in the glare of a nuclear bomb, which is for about kind of 15 minutes. And I was out there, so it was the 30th of January 2016, and I was listening, instead of to like my usual soundtrack of Take That, to, I thought, oh, I'm going to try and improve my mind. I'm going to listen to Radio 4. Jarvis Cocker had a documentary on it about Carson McCullers, who was this writer who wrote exquisitely about loneliness, Heart's a Lonely Hunter, and she very sadly died of alcoholism in her 50s, several suicide attempts. And there was this archive audio footage of her, and she said, sometimes it feels like everyone is part of a we except for me. And it literally stopped me in my tracks. And I thought, you were part of a we, you just didn't know it. So I go home and I was like, I'm going to do this thing. I was like, what if I set up this group and we can just, you know, like you've got AA, you've got NA, you kind of got all these things, but mental illness, that affects one in four of us. Like, how many people in this room have experienced mental illness or know people that have experienced mental illness? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And it's so common. And what I've realised from writing about it extensively in The Telegraph is that it's really, really, really fucking normal to feel weird, okay? It's as normal as getting a cold. It's as normal as having the flu, and we need to treat it as such. So I thought going outside is a really great, you know, it seems like a tiny thing, but when you're in the grips of a depression, it's one of the hardest things at all. So I went on Twitter and was like, what about we set up this group? And my husband was like, are you high? And I was like, I am on a lot of diazepam. And then he said, but what if a load of nutters turn up? And I was like, that's the point. Anyway, so I did it and I said, Valentine's Day, I'll be at this cafe in Hyde Park. And 20 people turned up. And it's just grown, and now people all over the country, you know, people have got in touch, and it's like this self-supporting thing. So we create walk packs. We've got them all over the country. We've got they're even in America, Dubai, Bangalore, and it's all about creating your own community.
The tagline is helping you find your we.
Yeah,
which looks better written down on the website. I'll be honest.
I have to say, when I'm like, if you want to like find us on Twitter, I'm like at find your we. That's W-E. But I just, it really stuck with me, and it's such a simple idea, and it's been so incredible to see how it's grown. And now I've sort of talked myself into doing the marathon for Heads Together, who are the official charity of the London Marathon this year. And people are like, you know, it's going to be really hard. I'm like, God, no, we thought it was going to be really easy, like a walk in the park. But no, it's going to be really hard. But I feel like running 26.2 miles, there's no way that can be any harder than the days when I haven't been able to move at all because of the crushing weight of depression on my chest. So I just think it's so important to talk about it.
Yeah, and exercise in terms of zoning out and getting some good vibes is a good way to do it. So you actually walk and talk with you,
yeah,
on the
also,
mental health mates.
The thing about walking and talking is that there's that kind of, when you, I don't know if anyone's ever been kind of told to go to group therapy sessions, and you all sort of sit in a circle and stare at each other in a really grubby room that's kind of like nicotine stained and from years ago, and you think, this is really depressing and I don't want to, you know, it's quite confrontational. The really great thing about walking and talking is that you just kind of get into a flow, and you might not even be talking about your mental health. You could be talking about what you're seeing or what you're, but it's just, and it's the most amazing thing to see people turn up who are completely, you know, you almost think, if I don't go and grab that person now, they're going to run away. They're not going to come.
Can I ask a question? Do more women turn up than men? Because I work with, not name dropping, but I will whenever I can, Rethink. I'm an ambassador for Rethink, who do precisely with this stuff, trying to change the dialogue around mental health. There is a massive disproportionate problem with men not talking about their mental health.
Well, if you're a man under the age of 45 in the UK, the thing most likely to kill you is not cancer, it's not a car, it's not a gun, it's not alcohol, it's yourself. And that's just, it's not acceptable. And actually, the figures are getting worse and worse for women too. But yeah, we do get a high proportion of women compared to men, but more and more men are coming, which every time a man comes, I kind of want to run up and hug him, and then I'm thinking, that might look a bit odd.
Well, men, we don't have the support networks that women do there, you know, in terms of, you know, women will quite happily go to another woman, oh, I'm off to the toilet, will you come with me? You say that to another bloke, and, you know, there's some strange looks, usually.
Yeah, well, I think it's all... But I think also in Britain, we've had, you know, that stiff upper lip thing. It's bollocks, and it's quite literally killed people, you know.
I read this brilliant book, we'll have to do book recommendations, called The Village Effect by Susan Pinker. Did anyone read it? Steven Pinker's sister. And so this happens all around the world. It's not just stiff upper lip Britain. Everywhere around the world, male suicide rate, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times higher. Men, like you say... We don't go to the loo and have a chat while we're weeing. That's just the start of it. We don't do anything. We're like, oh, Gary's having a breakdown, legend, and then sort of walk off. But there are a few places in the world where men don't just have equivalent rates of mental illness or lower, but they also, the disparity between male and female longevity disappears. All Western countries, women live longer than men 5 to 7 years, and there are less male centenarians than there are. But certain pockets of the world, this doesn't happen. And Susan Pinker's theory is the geographical quirks of these areas, normally mountain villages, mean that men can't isolate themselves. Men tend to get to a certain age, shut the door, miserable, chair in the corner, don't want to speak to anyone, don't want visitors, heart attack, death. That's the male pattern. Whereas in, for example, this is just one of the examples, this particular Sardinian mountainside, the granddads, they can't isolate themselves. The aunts are walking through, the cousins are walking through, morning, Giorgio. There seems to be a cardiological and neuroprotective benefit of sharing problems, which your thing is smashing head on. But also over a lifetime seems to affect men because we're either raised that way or something in our makeup means we have more of a tendency
and it's basically it's just talking, isn't it? It's, you know, just talking out loud to people.
But no one has ever got better from a mental illness by not talking about it. I mean, we know talking therapies are what, and you know, you may get better briefly, but it'll probably come back. And the other thing is that the one thing I've learned is that what all mental illness has in common with it being with each other, be it eating disorder, depression, OCD, whatever, is that it lies to you. It tells you you're a freak. It tells you you're alone. It tells you that no one else is going to understand the way you're feeling. And that's how it thrives. And the moment you go to a group and someone goes, like a woman that looks like me says, yeah, I've sometimes thought I was a paedophile too. And it's like, oh, it's just a fucking stupid illness. You know, like I have a name for my OCD, which is Jareth the Goblin King, because he's sort of like, you know, in David Bowie and Labyrinth, kind of enticing but essentially evil. And if you can just kind of take it out of you, and it's really powerful.
And rates are going up, and some fingers being sort of pointed at social media for this.
But I don't definitely. I mean, I think social media, I think it can be unhelpful. Obviously, you know, the kind of the selfie culture and stuff, it's unhelpful. But I don't think rates are really going up. I think we're just talking about it more often. If you're telling...
Brian, because... Theresa May's famous speech a couple of weeks ago where mental health was going to be addressed and a bigger resource was going to be going in. And as long as I've been a member of Parliament, which is known for being far too long, there's always been a talk about parity with physical health.
Bollocks.
And, you know, like, is there a sense... I mean, I think there's a greater understanding politically and about the need to make sure this is properly resourced, but is there a sense that this is actually getting down there and people are actually securing that extra funding and support?
No, in a word. And that's why groups like Mental Health Mates are springing up, because people can't find... you go to a doctor and they will sort of say... I mean, this is the thing, this is why antidepressant... And I'm a big fan of antidepressants, and I hate the way we talk about them as we do, like, cocaine and heroin, like, oh, when are you going to come off them, you know? Are we hooked on them? In a way, you just wouldn't say someone who had asthma and, you know, had an inhaler, or someone who had diabetes. And there's this whole terrible thing, but you go to a doctor and that's all they have. They can't... If they say to you, well, OK, I have got something that's going to make you better, but we're going to shove you on a waiting list and it could take 6 months, well, you're going to come out feeling a hell of a lot bleaker. But we need the doctors need to be much better. You know, the NHS needs to be much better. The government needs much better about, getting out the message that it's not just antidepressants. It's not just therapy. It's an entire, like, it's really boring, but it is just eating well. It is moving. It's getting out there. It's feeling the thrum of other heartbeats around you, you know, and not isolating yourself. And I'm not an athletic human being at all, but I ran 5 miles today and I felt high as a kite afterwards. And the change in me between between this time last year when I could barely, I was in a complete state, suicidal, to now is incredible. And I know I'll probably get ill again, but that's come from Mental Health Mates and the walking and the sharing and the talking. And I would just say, if anyone in here felt lost, do get in touch at Find Your Wee, but with W-E, not yeah. Wee.
Very moving. You are Parliamentary Tweeter of the Year, Pete.
Yes.
Well, have you been cyberbullied? Are you a cyberbully?
Well, it's quite remarkable because I won the contest in 2014-15, and it was the first time they ever held the Parliamentary Tweeter of the Year contest, and they've suddenly abandoned it. So it's almost like Brazil winning the World Cup three times. I get to keep the crown, you know, for the rest of eternity, so I can always refer to myself as such.
And as you tweeting, are you there thinking, oh, that's not a very good one? That's not up to the standard of Parliamentary Tweeter of the Year. That's not...
Well, I just retweet you. That seems to get me on all right. But like, it's a great meet for politicians. We get lots and lots of dreadful abuse, horrible things said to us, and people feel that there's a right and a sort of ownership because you are an MP and a public figure that they can say whatever they like to you. And, you know, I mean, you do get lots of stuff. But a lot of really good things. But the thing about Twitter and social media is it does allow a means to communicate that I never had when I was first an MP. You're able to say things that's out there. You're able to pick up interesting articles that you think you'd like to share with people who hopefully are politically like-minded. So, you know, it's a curse and a blessing, but it's totally and utterly a huge feature of political life. Now, I don't know any members of Parliament who aren't on Twitter and aren't active on Twitter because, you know, you're losing such a meaningful way to communicate, to absorb information and to make sure it's going to be transmitted and, you know, passed on.
And Russell, you do a caning where you take a topic, a trending topic, and give it a good caning. You've been caning Southern Rail recently.
What happened was, I was doing this series called Stupid Man's Smartphone for BBC Two, and it was on iPlayer as well, obviously. And I had to go different corners of the globe and survive using only a smartphone. So you got dumped on a mountain, you get a mission, and then you have to tweet, can I make water from snow, blah, blah. So I survived with the fact, and I took a different online star with me. This is the new world that's coming.
Are you like Bear Grylls?
No, that's the point. It's called Stupid Man Smartphone, because I end up like crying and crying in the bush.
Basically, he was Googling Bear Grylls to find out what he should be doing.
All of that. And one of these, I was filming the third episode, and this guy called Mazzy Maz, who this YouTube star I'd never heard of, there were girls crying at Heathrow when we got off the plane. And when we landed in Warsaw to film, there were Polish versions of the same girls crying. I mean, these are the YouTube stars, are massive. He said to me, why don't one of you guys ever just do stand-up, down your phone and put it online? It doesn't really work like that. We've been doing it for months and we do it on TV. And I got both thought, man, I thought, why don't I just freaking do it? So I went down, literally down my shed, put my phone, thought, everyone's going to mock me for this. Went like that with the news. Didn't pick something I cared about, just went like that with something in the newspaper, whatever the story was. Kanye West had done something ridiculous. And just started ranting, like pre-recorded, not live. And then I cut it up, took about an hour to edit it. And people, it's like the way you've done the sort of Goddard jump cuts. It's like, no, I've got one camera. How else are you going to film on one camera? You're obviously going to appear over the other side of the room. I'm not doing it to be trendy. And the first one, like 40,000 people. I was like, 40,000 people just watched me making fun of Kanye. And then I worked out it's better if you pick a single issue. And then I did this one about the sugar tax. And bang, 800,000 people watched it. End up in the newspaper. Theresa May's being... Oh, not Theresa May, whoever was in the change.
800,000, that's more than Southern Rail have been transporting over the last year.
So it's great because normally as a comedian you're thinking, right, I've got to wait for the Apollo or the Royal Variety or I'm doing this thing on Comedy Central. But I can think, right, I've got some comedy. I want to do some stuff to 250,000 people now. Like, I've just put one up the other day taking the piss out of Theresa May, grovelling about the special relationship with Trump and everything. So a while back, I'm not a Southern Rail passenger, I have to say, but it was the most requested topic. I kept saying, well, I don't live in Brighton. People said, please cane Southern Rail, please. So I thought, well, where can I go with this? Because you can either make fun of the...
Not to Brighton.
Nowhere.
Clapham
stuck
Junction.
At Clapham sobbing.
Not to Milton Keynes. Not to Clapham Junction.
If you don't know what it's about, anyone listening to this, it's to do with the guards on the train, the ones that go beep, 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 press the button, check the platform's clear for everyone safe to get on, then everyone gets on, beep, 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 they press the button, and everyone gets back on again. So they want to get rid of that job. And some say that there's a safety implication if they get rid of that job. And in fact, they're getting rid of lots of men and women's jobs. I mean, that's not a small thing. And so they started striking, and they kept striking, and it got worse and worse and worse. And I thought, why is no one making fun of the guy right at the very top. How, I'm not like super lefty or anything, I promise I'm not, but on this occasion, the guy that runs the Go Ahead Group, which most people in this room are listening to have never heard of, I thought it was a chocolate biscuit you didn't have to feel guilty about, right? There's a guy called David Brown. Anyone heard of him? No. He just paid himself £2 million in July. Bearing in mind the government's bankrolling a lot of these companies, Govia and Southern Rail and Go Ahead, he just paid himself £2 million for a failing company with a dispute he can't even resolve. And we spend our lives taking the piss out of some guy just because his job's become outdated or having to go at the commuters for being irascible. But really, the problem is this guy right at the very top.
The things have got so bad on Southern Rail, though, isn't it? Is that when the passengers hear there's a bus replacement service, they cheer. That's how bad they've got. But you're right, it's all about who operates the doors. They want the train drivers to operate the doors because they're saying the guards, they have to give them extra training to operate the doors. But I always think when the train stops, you press that button.
I live on the Southern Rail route and I've never ever seen a guard operate. I'm like, excuse me, can someone come and open this door for me?
Yeah, and you're up by the door going, where's the guard? I can't get off. God, I'm just going to have to go all the way to Brighton.
You press the button, don't you, when it beeps, you get on, you then press the button again, it closes. You think, well, I've had no training, but I think I'm pretty good at this.
Yeah. But they're not. I'm not. I'm just playing devil's advocate here. They don't just do that when it's late and stuff. They're checking, you know, the travellers who might be more vulnerable are safe, and they're looking up and down the platform. And yeah, it's not a bad job to exist. I get it. Like people move on. It's just the same argument that says, well, maybe we should pay for GPs. It's like, yeah, okay, maybe we should. But then again, why can't we live in a world we don't have to pay for GPs and we do have train guards and some fucker doesn't get paid £2 million at the top of the tree?
Mm. So we'll go to questions now. We're running out of time. Just before we do, I've got a chance to remind everybody who we've got coming up. It's the last Monday of the month. And so end of February, we've got Owen Jones, who organised the march today. Wow. Owen Jones from The Guardian will be coming along. He'll be here with Stephen Kinnock, MP, and with Joe Caulfield. And then in March, we've got Rich Hall. He'll be here with Jess Phillips, MP, and Hugo Rifkin from The Times.
That'll be a good one.
Lovely, thank you very much. Hopefully they'll all be good ones, rather than...
Rather than tonight's crap.
Shame about this one, but... Yeah. Yeah.
You'll get over that.
I'll definitely come along to that
And
one.
April, we've got Nick Clegg coming along with Matt Ford. We'll be a good one. We'll be a good one. Pete does a lot of work with Matt, so with MP4. So, yes, please come along to one of those. Also, if anybody's listening on the podcast, any questions, andyparsons.co.uk. So, hands up. We haven't got much time. Hands up. Lady at the back has got a question, so if we could get the microphone over there.
I have a friend who has the same sort of OCD that you were describing, and it sounds very, very horrible. And I just kind of wanted to ask how I can be a good friend to her when she's going through a particularly bad time with her OCD.
You just be a friend and be incredibly tolerant. And I just think being there for someone and being able to offer them a shoulder and try and get her out of the house. You know, go for walks, don't take her to the pub to get pissed. I'm the only one that's come on stage with a glass, with a beer, but, you know...
To be fair, the MP did have one backstage, but thought it would look better if he came on with water.
It's true.
I almost got away with it.
He had a whiskey and a kilt, but we told him.
But just, you know, be kind to her and let her be make her be kind to herself as well, and tell her to come along to a mental health mix walk, or email me. Just bryony@mentalhealthmates.co.uk. Oh, you can buy her my book.
Lovely.
You can read it or rent it from a library. Do that. Rent it from a library for her.
We've only really got time for one more. So we've got a lady down the front here.
I have a question for everyone, but the Scots among you may be able to answer better with your long history of wall building. So I'd like some practical action to take away from today. I understand Donald Trump really likes golf courses. You seem to be good at walls. Can we wall him in? What can we do to take action if he comes to the country? And, you know, I'd be willing to send you some bricks. Yeah, so I'm wondering what you'd do with them.
And I'm not sure you built that wall that the lady refers to.
We can't claim that was the Romans, so perhaps we could ask for some of their assistance.
Fall back, but like Donald, blame, honestly.
But Donald, you're right.
It's
Donald,
someone else, isn't
he's
it?
He's got a whole set of golf courses in Scotland just now, and of course he was made a global ambassador for Scotland, which we just rescinded once all the other stuff happened. But like, does anybody remember the photo when there's this huge issue when he was trying to redevelop his golf course, and he came to Scotland to try and kick people off their ground, and it was just one woman with one banner, and I won't say the word, but it begins with C and ends with unt, and that was all it was standing there, you know, in a protest.
It wasn't capitalist.
And Theresa May went to see, when the last time I was in Scotland, it was the day before Brexit, and everybody was scorning me because I predicted it. Turns out he actually was there the day afterwards, and that's why people were scorning him for predicting it, because it happened the day before. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have to wrap up proceedings now. Thank you very much for coming. If people are listening on the podcast, then please subscribe. It means it goes straight into your inbox and it means we can keep it free. So please do that. There's no cost involved. Just one click. We'll just wait very quietly while you do that. Okay, brilliant. Well done for that. Please spread the word. We're the last Monday of the month. Please tell everybody about it. Get people down. Tell people about the podcast. From Tiny Acorns. Who knows what can grow, ladies and gentlemen, provided the little squirrels don't snaffle them. So that's my message to you. If you want to get involved, we try and encourage people to do one thing in between shows. So, Bryony, one more time, if people would get involved with Mental Health Mates, what's the address?
Mentalhealthmates.co.uk, or you can email me, bryony@mentalhealthmates.co.uk, or Twitter @findyourwee, or on Instagram. There's plenty of places.
For your well-being, they suggest one of the things you can do is think of 5 things that you love and try and do as many of them as you can every day. And apparently our top 5 in the UK are a cuddle, somebody saying I love you, coffee, chocolate and clean sheets. But I was thinking, if you're having a cuddle with somebody saying I love you and there's coffee and there's chocolate, those sheets are unlikely to be clean, are they? So many thanks to our panel tonight. Hopefully we've had a good time, ladies and gentlemen. Spread the word. Good luck.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.